Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Wednesday, October 12th, and this is the Ion College Basketball Podcast. I got Matt Norlander with me, and the college basketball season tips exactly 1 month from yesterday. Can't get here soon enough, far as I'm concerned. Not a whole lot happening this week, which is why I repeat, cannot get here soon enough. But Kentucky, you know, they did hold their pro days on Sunday and Monday in Lexington on a campus. And I talked to multiple NBA scouts, but I used a post earlier in the week. I talked to one guy in particular, NBA scout, who was there for both days, and I just asked him three very simple questions. Who's the most impressive prospect you saw? Who surprised you? And how good do you think Kentucky's going to be as a basketball team? And the answer to the first question, he said De'Aaron Fox, the point guard, who is going to be in that backcourt, presumably with Malik Monk and Isaiah Briscoe. Is that the right answer, Norlander? Is that who you would pick as Kentucky's top freshman as well?
I wouldn't, actually. I would pick Bam Adebayo, their big man down low. I think Fox will have the most impact of any freshman, and I like Fox's game a lot. I think he'll have a pretty good year. And I wrote on CBS Sports earlier this week that I think Fox's talent and the roster Calipari has this season and kind of the offense I expect Kentucky to run, I think Fox has a good chance of being like a top four point guard at the college level Calipari's ever coached. I think that highly of him. I think he can be that good. But I think Adebayo's got a better chance of showing more at the college level and being a higher draft pick overall. If I was saying who would be more valuable, it would be Fox for a number of reasons. One, he's going to have the ball in his hands more. But Bam's a really good player, extremely physical, has good pop to him, very strong. I think he'll be really good down low and underneath. But either way, Kentucky is interesting because it's a really good class, and you've got those two. I'm higher on Wenyen Gabriel than a lot of people. I think he might be something of a role player to start, but I actually think Wenyen Gabriel is going to have nights where he's a stat monster and gets better as the season goes along, so I think he'll be pretty good. I'm lower than most on Malik Monk. I know you love Monk.
He's love gonna Malik
score.
Monk.
You love him, and he's going to score, but I actually don't trust his jump shot, and I could see him having a number of lulls this season, but I could see the highs being really, really high. And then you got Sasha Kalea-Jones, who will probably be a multi-year player, but also is a pro prospect. So Kentucky, yeah, every year they bring in new guys, and that's part of the interest with the program because they're always, you know, surefire NBA picks and all that. He's never had a class like this in terms of the size, the dynamic. I kind of like all the players overall. I don't feel that we're overrating Kentucky. We have them number two. I think that makes a lot of sense. The guy that I'm most interested in looking at, though, is of the freshmen on the team is Fox. And one more quick note, GP. I'm actually not that – we're in the midst of, you know, starting to compile our top list of the 100 parentheses and one players in college basketball. I'm not high on Briscoe overall. I guess we should probably have him on that list, but he didn't do a ton last year. He got into a weird spot where his draft stock wasn't great, so he was kind of forced to come back. I think he will be a factor this year, but I would put him – at best as the fifth most talented person on that team, and that even might be a little bit too high.
On Malik Monk, you mentioned you don't trust his jumper, and I hear you. I mean, we both watched him plenty of times in the summer over the years. I will say I talked to the Kentucky staff about him specifically a couple months ago, and you know, after he had already been on campus and had been working out, and they told me he was shooting the ball really, really well. Now, whether that holds up in game situations, we'll see, but he – had been shooting the ball, you know, fairly well since arriving on campus in Lexington. You mentioned you think De'Aaron Fox could be a top four John Calipari point guard of all time. How do you make that list? Is it Derrick Rose, John Wall,
yep,
Tyreek Evans, or Tyler Ulis? Like, how do you do it?
I would say Ulis. I would go. Rose.
I will say this. Tyreek Evans was awesome at Memphis.
He was. And I would actually – trust me, it's a little bit of a logjam there. And I'm only speaking in terms of impact value at the college level, not, you know, what they became in the pros. I would go Rose 1, Wall 2, and that's super close. I would go Ulis 3.
And I think if you ask Cal that he would have, I think this would be his order too. And then I think Fox has a chance to be four. But yeah, Evans was good. He was unconventional too. I think the reason why perhaps his reputation isn't looked upon as highly as the others is because, correct me if I'm wrong, GP, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I believe that like the Memphis team he was a part of wasn't a vintage Memphis team. They weren't great. He wasn't like a natural, pure point guard. He was a different kind of guy, but he was awesome. Don't get me wrong. I think he was really, really good. Him and Brandon Knight are kind of neck and neck in terms of, you know, 4 or 5 on the overall list. But I just think Fox, he's listed at 6'3", man. I think he's taller than that. Maybe I'm wrong, but he plays like he's 6'5 to me. Great vision, makes a lot of good decisions. I think he's set up to succeed this season overall. Kentucky's just, it's an interesting team because they have some veterans there. I mean, Derek Wills should get plenty of time. You've got Briscoe, who to me is, you know, he's a step down from, say, what Liggins was a few years ago. Just he'll be a good defensive force, a good presence overall. But the freshmen are definitely going to have to carry that team. Calipari's not unfamiliar with that. It should be plenty interesting. And by the way, I mean, we're just singing the same song over and over here. But part of the reason why I think we're rightfully putting Kentucky so high is that, Parrish, I'm just not inspired by the SEC yet again. Like A&M, yeah, they'll be solid, but they're not going to be as good as they were last year. Florida, they might still be a year away from being a surefire tournament team. Vanderbilt should be okay. They got a new coach set up. Let's see what Mississippi State can do. You know, they're kind of a to-be-determined kind of team. I mean, you look around the league, and again, there's just – I want it to be better than what it is, and it's just not. I can't say with any sort of conviction that the SEC will be a top-four conference.
It doesn't look like it because you start to ask yourself who can even seriously threaten Kentucky in the SEC, and on paper the answer is nobody. Circling back around to that 2009 Memphis team with Tyreek Evans, because I think what you said is – like, feels true. And I agree with you. You said it wasn't a vintage Memphis team. They weren't great. Except they finished 33-4.
it's ridiculous.
No, and fourth in KenPom. They finished fourth in the KenPom ratings. I don't know if you remember. I only remember because of where I live. They started 6-3. They lost to Xavier, lost to Georgetown, lost to Syracuse, and didn't look good at all. Like, I think they got unranked. And at that point, Cal basically decided, because he was playing Tyreek off the ball.
I remember this, yes.
And then he decided we just got to put the ball in the kid's hands and let him go. And once he put the ball in Tyreek Evans' hand, it was over with. They ran through everybody. Now, a lot of that was Conference USA opponents, but they went into Gonzaga in February on the road and beat Gonzaga by 18. That was, a game day situation. They went to the Sweet 16 and lost to Missouri 102-91. That's when Mike Anderson was the coach there. But I'm with you. If you take 2006, 7, 8, 9, those 4 years of Memphis basketball, I think that team was the worst. But it still got to a Sweet 16 and was ranked fourth at KenPom with a 33-4 record. To your point about Kentucky this year. Like, we do have them ranked second. And it was interesting. The scout told me, he said, I don't think they're as good as the recent Final Four teams. Like, I could see them making an Elite Eight. Like, I think they might be a top eight team in the country. But I think college basketball be down, you know, across the nation. That's at least what I'm seeing when I go to practices. And therefore, certainly a Final Four is on the table. I would say anytime you've got three possible lottery picks, probable lottery picks, the Final Four is a Final Four is in the cards. So, like, anybody putting a ceiling on Kentucky, I think, is a little bit silly. But when I, you know, posted that, I got some pushback from other college basketball writers saying, "Oh, it's not going to be a down year in college basketball." And my instincts are that these are guys, and they're my friends, so, like, whatever. But, like, they just love college basketball, so they see the good in everything. But you look at it right now, you know, and we're about a month away. I think Grayson Allen's the only first or second team All-American who returned to school. One of the key freshmen is injured, Harry Giles. I don't know that there's an obvious great team on paper. Like, we think Duke can be really good. We think Kentucky can be really good. But, you know, Villanova's a lot of people's, you know, number three team in the country, and there's no reason to think they'll be as good as they were last year. because they lost two, you know, starters, a big and a point guard. So, like, listen, we're college basketball writers and analysts and whatever. Like, we're going to get into this no matter what. But, like, is there a whole lot of stuff for a casual sports fan to grab onto heading into this college basketball season?
I think there's stuff just because, listen, let me bring up your rankings right now, okay, as we're talking through this, because we do have a situation here, and granted, every single year you've got a number of blue bloods that are ranked, but when you've got Duke and Kentucky 1 and 2, I think that automatically lends itself
sure.
to having people being, you know, able to grab onto something. Villanova has, honestly, I feel like Josh Hart is relatively well known, and everyone watched Chris Jenkins hit the shot. So they're both back. So Villanova has a familiarity factor there.
I think you could walk Josh Hart into any sports bar in America and he would go unnoticed unless it was in Philadelphia.
I think you could do that with all of but 3 or 4 college football players as well. So I think that's a relative, you know, I mean, that's true. You could do that with all but 3 NHL players. So I get what you're saying there.
Yeah, but isn't it because those guys wear helmets? Face in
yeah,
like,
but
mask?
Yeah, to a certain extent, sure. I mean, I guess.
You couldn't walk half of the NBA into a bar without him being noticed. And yet, how many college basketball players would be recognized walking into a bar in America somewhere? Grayson Allen, I think. But, like, yep. The list is pretty short.
I think you're right about that. I think that's also, I mean, listen, NBA markets its stars so fantastically well that I think that's part of it as well. But listen, Arizona will be highly ranked again. Kansas is in the top 5. Michigan State will be good again. And a lot of, you know, as with college football and college basketball, the coaches are the stars overall. Mm-hmm. Do I think it's a down year? I don't think it's a down year because, and listen, I can understand why a scout would say that going in. I am a firm believer that this freshman class is extremely good.
I think it is too.
Evan Daniels wrote a piece yesterday over at I believe Fox Sports. He's now doing stuff for them on College Hoops. He says this could be the strongest freshman class since 2007. That was the class that had Odin in it, Conley, and was a Durant and all them. It was a terrific class. So I think we could have a situation when we get to January where you're just going to look and you're going to see plenty of fantastic players, and it's going to be a relatively good year. Like, I'm excited. I think overall, again, though, I love the sports.
Wasn't the subsequent class even, like, really good as well? Because that was Derrick Rose, Eric Gordon, OJ Mayo, Kevin Love.
Yes, they were both, yeah. I mean,
that one was awesome.
It was extremely, extremely good. Fantastic. This one has a really good chance because there are so many really good point guards in the class.
Oh, yeah. I mean, no, it's a strong point guard class. And the guy we were talking about at the top, De'Aaron Fox, is a big reason for that.
Dennis Smith, who I think is awesome. You even got, like, Kobe Simmons at Arizona, who will probably pop in a big way next season. But he's still – I mean, he's a 6'6 point guard. It's crazy. So there are really good point guards all around. I get what scouts are saying. I ultimately think we're going to get to April, and even, like, we're not going to top last year's title game. But, or, you know, before we get to the tournament, I think we'll get there and say, you know what, 2016, 2017 was better on the whole than 15, 16 overall. And a lot of that will have to do with the fact that we have so many really good freshmen at so many really good programs. And it's not just like, oh, the top programs got freshmen. We're talking like between Kentucky, Duke, Michigan State, Arizona, Kansas, they're going to have GP, they're going to have anywhere between 7 to 10 of the top 20 NBA picks next season.
Right.
So that's going to be a huge factor in people paying attention.
That helps because we didn't necessarily have that last year. I don't begrudge anybody for picking whatever school they pick, but it seemed wasted a little bit that we had 2 pros playing at Washington. You know, they're off the radar, not very good. Henry Ellenson was at Marquette. He was great, team not that good. Ben Simmons was at LSU. He was great. Team wasn't any good. So, you know, the year prior, we had Karl Anthony Towns at Kentucky and Jahlil Okafor at Duke. Last year, some of the best players, prospects in the country were playing on mostly irrelevant college basketball teams. And I think that dampened things a little bit. But just to circle back around, I would say this. Although you were on the Buddy Hield train very, very early, like in the preseason, who would have ever thought we'd have looked up in January and been talking as much as we were talking about Buddy Hield and Denzel Valentine, right? So as I've said a million times, college basketball is a sport that always creates storylines. You don't always know where they're coming from, but they're always there eventually. And you just hope that there'll be enough of them, high-profile ones that'll draw in the casual viewers, the guys and gals who would normally not pay attention until the brackets are released. Another interesting story that you posted earlier today, CBSSports.com, not to turn this into a Kentucky podcast entirely. But the story's too good. John Wall tells a story to Matt Jones from Kentucky Sports Radio about how when he was a prospect coming out of the state of North Carolina, he was inside of a Kentucky practice being run by Billy Gillespie. He's just there as a recruit. And I guess his phone went off, and Gillespie kicked him out of practice. This is a kid who was the number one recruit in America, and you kick him out of your practice facility because his phone went off? And I get it. You'd prefer a phone not go off in the middle of a practice, same way you'd prefer a phone not go off in the middle of a press conference. But holy crap. Like, what is it? How do you get – if I were a college basketball coach and I had the number one prospect in America in my gym – like, he could take a dump on the floor, and I'd be like, okay, like, we know we're just going to ride this thing out. I prefer him not doo-doo on the floor, but like, whatever. He's the number one prospect in the country. What does it say about Billy Clyde that he straight kicked John Wall out of practice when John Wall was a prospect?
I mean, this is, yeah, like, just let's flash back to that time when – Gillespie takes on the Kentucky job. It's way more than he's prepared for, okay? The thing turns into a dumpster fire almost immediately. You've got – I mean, just picture – like, listen, when you get top 10 prospects, let alone the number one prospect in the country on a visit, okay? And I don't know if it was an unofficial or an official. That detail I don't have. But I can't even – interpret this kind of behavior. For all we know, maybe Wall's phone went off five times. It was the fifth time, and Gillespie was like, "You got to step outside, and I can't have you in here anymore." That could have been it, or it could have been the first time, and he just demanded to throw him out. But this is the kind of thing that encapsulates why Gillespie at Kentucky just did not work. And Gillespie, I mean, listen, if you talk to media reporters, former players, or coaches, Gillespie has legendary stories of his practices at a number of spots, some of them interesting, some of them, quite frankly, inappropriate and shocking. So this is just one in another long line of those. And at the time, Parrish, you were telling me this in Slack earlier, but, you know, Wall going to Kentucky with Gillespie there most likely wasn't going to happen because Calipari was just it's nuts to think, but Calipari was just recruiting at such an insane level at Memphis that it was known by many people covering at the time, and I was not covering the sport nationally when Wall was a prospect. I came the year after, but he was going to go to Memphis, and picturing – and not only that, but you were saying like Cousins was set up to go to Memphis. I mean, I'm just trying to picture Memphis with Cousins and Wall. Like, no, they would have won the league and averaged a margin of victory by 30 points that season if that had happened.
You mean here's what would have happened. That would have been the first 40-0 team in college basketball.
Very conceivably would have happened, yes. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
It was going to be John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins, Xavier Henry. I'm trying to think of who else was there at the time. Will Coleman. I want to say Darnell Dotson was a part of that. They had this thing set up, and whoever was, you know, scheduled to come back. I don't really remember the details, but like they were, it was shaping up to be the preseason number one team in the country. And because they played in Conference USA, a team that was maybe equipped to go undefeated. I mean, that team at Kentucky, which was all those guys, that Xavier Henry ended up going to Kansas as opposed to Kentucky. But it's essentially the team Cal had at Kentucky is essentially, you know, Patrick Patterson, not, but like the key parts, those guys were going to be at Memphis. Eric Bledsoe, he'd have probably got to come to Memphis. So, yeah, and they almost went undefeated, you know, that year at Kentucky. Of course, they lost their first game. You know who beat them, right?
I do know who beat them. You want to tell everyone who beat them?
Devin Downey. Shout out to Devin Downey.
Yes, he did.
John Wall's career loss. DeMarcus Cousins' first career loss in college. John Calipari's first loss at Kentucky came at the hands of Devin Downey. And somebody, I can't remember who it was. I'd give him credit if I did. They sent us a link to a story from like that year. And I think it was posted again, Kentucky Sports Radio. And the headline, swear to God, the headline of the story from like 2010 was shout out to Devin Downey.
No way.
I know. You didn't see it?
No, I did not.
They sent it to you as well, I think. But
okay. I might, if they sent it, like, I don't know. I might have missed it. But I got to, anyone listening, send that again. Cause like, I got to see that because that's ridiculous.
They found it from like way back then. I don't even know how they found it, but it was the headline on the blog post was shout out to Devin Downey, which was just terrific. But yeah, so John Wall was they were all coming to Memphis, and then of course when Cal got the Kentucky job, that fell apart pretty quickly, and as they say, the rest is history. But I guess I'd bottom line it like this: if I'm ever a college basketball coach, and at this point it appears I'm probably not gonna be, if I've got the number one if I've got the number one recruit in America in my gym, he can do whatever he wants.
Let's do it. Like, let's picture Tom Izzo throwing Josh Jackson out of a practice, or Bill Self throwing Markel Fultz out of a practice. Like, you just can't picture it happening.
No,
like, it just would not happen. But it happened then, and Wall went on to be a number one pick. It's wild.
I will say, I have been inside of a Billy Gillespie practice at Kentucky. I was there for his first Big Blue Madness, which was just so awkward. It was the first moment where I went, oh no, this might not work. Because, you know, it's a big event, and they marched him out, and he's like in front of this massive crowd and spotlight. And Billy, let me be clear, I always liked Billy Gillespie. I know he's a flawed individual who's had some personal issues, but like, personally, I never had any issues with Billy Gillespie. Like, I like Billy Gillespie. Now, I never had to play for him or work for him, but like, I never had a problem with him. So I say this not to like pile on, but just, I'm just telling a story. But I was at that Big Blue Madness, and they put that spotlight on him, and he looked so uncomfortable. Like, it was like, where John Calipari is made for that, Billy Gillespie is couldn't be the opposite in terms of, you know, Billy Gillespie just a basketball coach. He didn't have much use for all that other stuff. And when those lights came on and I saw his face, and you could probably find it on YouTube, like he didn't know what to say. He didn't know what to do. He looked like, to use a terrible cliche, deer in headlights. And that's the first time I went, this might not be a perfect fit. Guy's a hell of a basketball coach, but this whole Big Blue Nation thing might be a little overwhelming for him. And I think we found out it subsequently was. But the next day, I was at just a normal practice type practice. And I will say this, like, I had my computer out because I was, taking notes or whatever. And about midway through the practice, I see Billy talk to like one of the managers or grad assistants or something. And they come over to me and they go, hey, excuse me. And I said, yeah. And they said, hey, Coach Gillespie just wanted to know what you're doing on your computer. And I was like, I don't know. I just have it open because I always have it open. They're like, well, and I feel like this might have been pre-Twitter, so it might not have been about Twitter. But they were like, you know, we don't really want anything. They just very paranoid about what I was doing with my computer, which I found odd. But to his credit, because I've been in a million practices, that's never happened before. Nobody's ever asked me what's on your computer. Whether it's a Duke practice or a Carolina practice or a Calipari practice or whatever, but like, it was, they made a point. They wanted to know what was going on with my computer. But to Billy's credit, he didn't kick me out, so I did better than John Wall. Can you imagine not kicking me out, but kicking John Wall out? Boy, you got your priorities mixed up there, right?
Yes. Nice twist there. No. Absolutely, man. But
one last note before we get out of here. Earlier today, Arizona secured a commitment from a kid named Brandon Randolph, top 40 recruit, class of 2017. Of course, I think it was last month, certainly recently, they got DeAndre Ayton, number one recruit, class of 2017. And now, according to 24/7 Sports, Arizona has the number two ranked recruiting class in America. So Sean Miller, I think this will – is on track to be the fourth straight year he's at a top 10 recruiting class, according to 247 Sports. So no surprise, but it's worth noting that he's really got, Sean does, a strong thing rolling out there in Tucson.
He does. Listen, I will tease something here, because next week I think we're gonna have some really good preseason content coming next week. So on the podcast, we're gonna be able to talk about that in general. So my teaser is that, and it ties into this, I'm gonna put Arizona in my Final Four this year. I'm higher on them than a lot of people. And what I think is gonna happen here is Miller's been recruiting at such a high level for a while now, but with this class that he has right now and the success that I think is going to come this year, I think they'll contend with Oregon, be right there with Oregon and UCLA to win the Pac-12 title if they won it. I would not be shocked. And I'm going to put him in the Final Four. We really could be hitting a spot here where Miller's career, which has been so good, maybe hits like a truly elite a level where he is then mentioned unequivocally every single time with, you know, five or six other coaches that are considered greats in the game.
I think he's already there.
I think he's there as well, but I still think that, like, he's not a no-brainer to be mentioned there. I think a year like this, and now he's got another strong class coming, Parrish, then it's just like, and Boeheim, and Calipari, and Krzyzewski, and Miller, and Self, and Izzo. I just think that he will unequivocally, he's set up to do that now this season into next, because next year's class will obviously be huge as well. And when we do our top 101 players in college basketball a year from now, DeAndre Ayton, I can assure you, is going to be in the top five no matter who comes back next year.
Sean, of course, the only thing on his resume that's missing is the Final Four, right? But he has been to four Elite Eights. He's lost all four games, obviously. But I'll just say what I said on a podcast a few weeks back. You keep giving yourself opportunities. Like, if you – I think he got to four Final Fours before the age of 47. That suggests he's going to get to more, particularly if he continues to recruit at this level. You get there enough times, it's just going to bounce your way one time. It just will. So I would bet a whole bunch of money that Sean is in that Final Four, maybe a national championship coach at some point within the next 5 to 10 years, but certainly at some point in his career. I don't think there's a chance at all that he retires from being a college basketball coach without a Final Four on his resume. Remember, you can subscribe to the Eye on College Basketball podcast over on iTunes, so do that. It's the best way to get the latest episodes as quickly as possible. Thank you all so much for listening. Norlander and I will be back next week. Till then, take care.